Chapter 21. The shoulders carried him back to the little barefoot figure cowering in a corner of the kitchen at Pontesordo, while the farmyard rang with Philomena's call. "Here are you then, child of iniquity? Mamola, don't you know me?" he exclaimed. She hung back trembling, as though the sound of his voice roused an echo of fear, but Gamba, reddening slightly, took her hand and led her forward. "It is, indeed," said he, "your excellency's old playmate, the Mamola of Pontesordo, who consents to share my poverty and who makes me forget it by the tenderness of her devotion." But Mamola, at this, found voice. Oh, sir," she cried, "it is he who took me in when I was half dead and starving, who many a time went hungry to feed me, and who cares for the child as if it were his own." As she stood there, in her half-wild hollow-eyed beauty, which seemed a sickly efflorescence of the marshes, pressing to her breast another child of iniquity as pale and elfish as her former self, she seemed to Odo the embodiment of ancient wrongs, risen from the wasted soil, to haunt the dreams of its oppressors. Gamba shrugged his shoulders. "Why," said he, "a child of my own is a luxury I am never likely to possess, as long as I have wit to remember the fundamental axiom of philosophy. Entia non sunt multiplicanda praeter necessitatem. So it is natural enough fate should single me out to repair the negligence of those who have failed to observe that admirable principle. And now," he added, turning gently to Mamola, "it is time to put the boy to bed." When the door had closed on her, Odo turned to Gamba. I could learn nothing at Pontesordo," he said. They seemed unwilling to speak of her. What is her story, and where did you first know her?" Gamba's face darkened. "Why, you will remember, Cavalier," he said, "that some time after your departure from Pianura I passed into the service of the Marquess of Cerveno, then a youth of about 20, who combined with graceful manners and a fair exterior a nature so corrupt and cowardly, that he seemed like some such noble edifice as this, designed to house great hopes and high ambitions, but fallen to base uses, and become the shelter of thieves and prostitutes. Prince Ferrand being sickly from his birth, the Marquess was always looked on as the Duke's successor, unto Tresker, who even then, as master of the horse, cherished the ambitions he has since realized. No prospect could have been more distasteful. My noble brother, to do him justice, has always hated the Jesuits, who, as you doubtless know, were all powerful here before the recent suppression of the order. The Marquess of Cerveno was as completely under their control as the Duke is under that of the Dominicans, and Tresker knew that with the Marquess's accession his own rule must end. He did his best to gain an influence over his future ruler, but failing in this resolved to ruin him. Cerveno, like all your house, was passionately addicted to the chase, and spent much time hunting in the forest of Pontesordo. One day the stag was brought to bay in the farmyard of the old manor, and there Cerveno saw Mamola, then a girl of 16, of a singular wild beauty which sickness and trouble have since effaced. The young Marquess was instantly taken, and though hitherto indifferent to women, yielded so completely to his infatuation that Tresker, ever on the alert, saw in it an unexpected means to his end. He instantly married Mamola to Gaianazzo, whom she feared and hated. He schooled Gaianazzo in the part of the jealous and vindictive husband, and by the liberal use of money contrived that Mamola, while suffered to encourage the Marquess's addresses, should be kept so close that Cerveno could not see her save by coming to Pontesordo. This was the first step in the plan. The next was to arrange that Mamola should lure her lover to the hunting lodge on the edge of the chase. This lodge, as your excellency may remember, lies level with the marsh, and so open to noxious exhalations, that a night's sojourn there may be fatal. The infernal scheme was carried out with the connivance of the scoundrels at the farm, who had no scruples about selling the girl for a few ducats. And as to Mamola, can you wonder that her loathing of Gaianazzo, and of her wretched life at Pontesordo, threw her defenseless into Tresker's toils? All was cunningly planned to exasperate Cerveno's passion and Mamola's longing to escape, and at length, pressed by his entreaties and innocently carrying out the designs of his foe, the poor girl promised to meet him after nightfall at the hunting lodge. The secrecy of the adventure, and the peril to which it exposed him, for Tresker had taken care to paint Gianazzo and his father in the darkest colors, were fuel to Cerveno's passion, and he went night after night to Pontesordo. The time was August, when the marsh breathed death, and the Duke, apprised of his favorite's imprudence, forbade his returning to the chase. Nothing could better have served Tresker, for opposition spurred the Marquess's languid temper, and he had now the incredible folly to take up his residence in the lodge. Within 3 weeks the fever held him. He was at once taken to Pianura, and on recovering from his seizure, was sent to take the mountain air at the baths of Lucca. But the poison was in his blood. He never regained more than a semblance of health, and his madness having run its course, his passion for Mamola turned to hate of the poor girl to whom he ascribed his destruction. Gianazzo, meanwhile, terrified by the report that the Duke had winded the intrigue, and fearing to be charged with connivance, thought to prove his innocence by casting off his wife and disowning her child. What part I played in this grim business I leave your excellency to conceive. As the Marquess's creature I was forced to assist at the spectacle without power to stay its consequences. But when the child was born I carried the news to my master, and begged him to come to the mother's aid. For answer, he had me beaten by his lackeys, and flung out of his house. I stomached the beating, and addressed myself to Tresker. My noble brother, whose insight is seldom at fault, saw that I knew enough to imperil him. The Marquess was dying, and his enemy could afford to be generous. He gave me a little money, and the following year obtained from the Duke my appointment as assistant librarian. In this way I was able to give Mamola a home, and to save her child from the innocenti. She and I, Cavalier, are the misshapen offspring of that cruel foster parent, who rears more than half the malefactors in the state. But please heaven the boy shall have a better start in life, and perhaps grow up to destroy some of the evils on which that cursed charity thrives. This narrative, and the sight of Mamola and her child, followed so strangely on the spectacle of sordid misery he had witnessed at Pontesordo, that an inarticulate pity held Odo by the throat. Gamba's anger against the people at the farm seemed as senseless as their own cruelty to their animals. What were they all, Mamola, her child, and her persecutors, but a sickly growth of the decaying social order? He felt an almost physical longing for fresh air, light, the rush of a purifying wine through the atmosphere of moral darkness that surrounded him. 2.12. To relieve the tension of his thoughts he set forth to Gamba the purpose of his visit. I am, said he, much like a stranger at a masked ball, where all the masks are acquainted with each other's disguises, and concerted to mystify the visitor. Among the persons I have met at court several have shown themselves ready to guide me through this labyrinth. But, till they themselves unmask, and declare their true characters, I am doubtful whither they may lead me. Nor do I know of any so well fitted as yourself to give me a clue to my surroundings. As for my own disguise, he added with a smile, I believe I removed it sufficiently on our first meeting, to leave you no doubt, as to the use to which your information will be put. Gamba, who seemed touched by this appeal, nevertheless hesitated before replying. At length he said, I have the fullest trust in your excellency's honor. But I must remind you that during your stay here you will be under the closest observation, and that any opinions you express will at once be attributed to the persons you are known to frequent. I would not, he continued hastily, say this for myself alone, but I have two mouths to feed, and my views are already under suspicion. Reassured by Odo's protestations, or rather, perhaps, by the more convincing warrant of his look and manner, Gamba proceeded to give him a detailed description of the little world in which chance had placed them. If you have seen the Duke, said he, I need not tell you that it is not he who governs the duchy. We are ruled at present by a triumvirate consisting of the Belverde, the Dominican and Tresker. Pave Pelago, the Prime Minister, is a dummy put in place by the Jesuits, and kept there by the rivalries of the other three. But he is in his dotage, and the courtiers are already laying wagers as to his successor. Many think Father Ignazio will replace him, but I stake my faith on Tresker. The Duke dislikes him, but he is popular with the middle class, who, since they have shaken off the yoke of the Jesuits, would not willingly see an ecclesiastic at the head of the state. The Duchess's influence is also against the Dominican, for Her Highness, being, as you know, connected with the Austrian court, is by tradition unfavorable to the Church party. The Duchess's preferences would weigh little with the Duke, were it not that she is sole heiress to the old Duke of Monte Loro, and that any attempt to bring that principality under the control of the Holy See might provoke the interference of Austria. In so ticklish a situation I see none but Tresker to maintain the political balance. He has been adroit enough to make himself necessary to the Duchess without alienating the Duke. He has introduced one or two trifling reforms that have given him a name for liberality in spite of the heavy taxes with which he has loaded the peasantry, and has in short so played his cards as to profit by the foibles of both parties. Her Highness, he continued, in reply to a question of Odo's, was much taken by him when she first came to Pianura, and before her feeling had cooled he had contrived to make himself indispensable to her. The Duchess is always in debt, and Tresker, as controller of finance, holds her by her besetting weakness. Before his appointment her extravagance was the scandal of the town. She borrowed from her ladies, her pages, her very lackeys. When she went on a visit to her uncle of Monte Loro she pocketed the money he bestowed on her servants. Nay, she was even accused of robbing the Marchioness of Pave Pelago, who, having worn one evening a diamond necklace which excited Her Highness's admiration, was waylaid on the way home, and the jewels torn from her neck by a crowd of masked ruffians among whom she is said to have recognized one of the ducal servants. These are doubtless idle reports, but it is certain that Tresker's appointment engaged him still more to the Duchess, by enabling him to protect her from such calumnies, while by increasing the land taxes he has discharged the worst of her debts, and thus made himself popular with the tradesmen as he had ruined. Your Excellency must excuse my attempting to paint the private character of Her Highness. Such facts as I have reported are of public notoriety, but to exceed them would be an unwarranted presumption. I know as he has the name of being affable to her dependents, capable of a fitful generosity, and easily moved by distress, and it is certain that her domestic situation has been one to excite pity and disarm criticism. With regard to His Highness, it is difficult either to detect his motives or to divine his preferences. His youth was spent in pious practices, and a curious reason is given for the origin of this habit. He was educated, as Your Excellency is doubtless aware, by a French philosopher of the school of Hobbes, and it is said that in the interval of his tasks the poor Duke, bewildered by his governor's distinctions between conception and cognition, and the object and the sentient, used to spend his time praying the saints to assist him in his atheistical studies. Indeed, a satire of the day ascribes him as making a novena to the Virgin to obtain a clearer understanding of the universality of matter. Others with more likelihood aver that he frequented the churches to escape from the tyranny of his pedagogue, and it is certain that from one cause or another his education threw him into the opposite extreme of a superstitious and mechanical piety. His marriage, his differences with the Duchess, and the evil influence of Cerveno exposed him to new temptations, and for a time he led a life which seemed to justify the worst charges of the enemies of materialism. Recent events have flung him back on the exaggerated devotion of his youth, And now, when his health permits, he spends his time serving Mass, singing in the choir at benediction and making pilgrimages to the relics of the saints in the different churches of the duchy. A few years since, at the instigation of his confessor, he destroyed every picture in the Dussel gallery that contained any naked figure or represented any subject offensive to religion. Among them was Titian's famous portrait of Duke Ascanio's mistress, known as the goldsmith's daughter, and a Venus by the Venetian painter Giorgione, so highly esteemed in its day that Pope Leo X is said to have offered in exchange for it the gift of a papal benefice and a cardinal's hat for Duke Guidobaldo's younger son. His Highness, moreover, impedes the administration of justice by resisting all attempts to restrict the church's right of sanctuary, and upholds the decree forbidding his subjects to study at the University of Pavia, where, as you know, the natural sciences are professed by the ablest scholars of Italy. He allows no public duties to interfere with his private devotions, and whatever the urgency of affairs, gives no audience to his ministers on holy days. And a Cardinal Elatier recently passing through the duchy on his return to Rome was not received at the Duke's table because he chanced to arrive on a Friday. His Highness's fears for Prince Ferrand's health have drawn a swarm of quacks to Pianura, and the influence of the church is sometimes counteracted by that of the physicians with whom the Duke surrounds himself. The latest of these, the famous Count Heiligenstern, who is said to have performed some remarkable cures by means of the electrical fluid and of animal magnetism, has gained such an ascendancy over the Duke that some suspect him of being an agent of the Austrian court, while others declare that he is a Jesuit en robe court. But just at present the people sent a Jesuit under every habit, and it is even rumored that the Belvert is secretly affiliated to a female branch of the society. With such a sovereign and such ministers, Your Excellency need not be told how the state is governed. Tresker, heaven save the mark, represents the liberal party, but his liberalism is like the generosity of the unarmed traveler who throws his purse to a footpad, and Father Ignazio is at hand to see that the people are not bettered at the expense of the church. As to the Duke, having no settled policy, and being governed only through his fears, he leans first to one influence, and then to another. But since the suppression of the Jesuits, nothing can induce him to attack any ecclesiastical privileges. The Diocese of Pianura holds a fief known as the Caccia del Vescovo, long noted as the most lawless district of the duchy. Before the death of the late Pope, Tresker had prevailed on the Duke to annex it to the principality, but the dreadful fate of Ganganali has checked bolder sovereigns than His Highness in their attempts on the immunities of the church, and one of the fairest regions of our unhappy state remains a barren waste, the lair of outlaws and assassins, and a menace to the surrounding country. His Highness is not incapable of generous impulses, and his occasional acts of humanity might endear him to his people, were it not that they despise him for being the creature of his favorites. Thus, the gift of Boscofolto to the Belvert has excited the bitterest discontent, for the Countess is notorious for her cruel exactions, and it is certain that at her death this rich fief will revert to the church. And now, Gamba ended with a smile, I have made known to Your Excellency the chief characters in the mask, as rumor depicts them to the vulgar. As to the court, like the government, it is divided into two parties. The Dukes, headed by the Belvert, and containing the stater and more conservative members of the church and nobility, and the Duchesses, composed of every fribble and flatterer, every gamester and rake, every intriguing woman and vulgar parvenu that can worm a way into her favor. In such an atmosphere you may fancy how knowledge thrives. The Duke's library consists of a few volumes of theological casuistry, and Her Highness never opens a book, unless it be to scandalize her husband by reading some prohibited pamphlet from France. The university, since the fall of the Jesuits, has been in charge of the Barnabite order, and, For aught I know, the Ptolemaic system is still taught there, together with the dialectic of Aristotle. As to science, it is anathema, and the press being subject to the restrictions of the Holy Office, and the university closed to modern thought, but few scholars are to be found in the duchy, save those who occupy themselves with belles lettres, or, like the Abate Crescenti, are engaged in historical research. Pianura, even in the late Duke's day, had its circle of lettered noblemen who patronized the arts, and founded the local Arcadia. But such pursuits are out of fashion, the Arcadia languishes, and the Bishop of Pianura is the only dignitary that still plays the machinas. His lordship, whose theological laxity and coolness toward the Holy Office have put him out of favor with the Duke, has, I am told, a fine cabinet of paintings, some of them, it is rumored, the very pictures that His Highness ordered to be burnt, and the Episcopal Palace swarms with rhyming Abatini, fashionable Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.